My name is Ibrahim Hooper. I'm National Communications Director with the Council on American-Islamic Relations, a Washington-based Muslim civil rights and advocacy group. I was one of the original founders in 1994. It was actually based on a template that was developed here in Minnesota. We had developed a program of civil rights advocacy and media relations outreach that were kind of a synergistic kind of thing where you would do the civil rights cases and take them public using a public relations model. And we took that to the national level with the Council on American-Islamic Relations. My co-founder with me is also from Minnesota, Nihad Awad. I think we saw that there was a need for a Muslim civil rights group in the mode of the NAACP, the ADL, even at times the ACLU, and that was missing, particularly at the national level. What we saw is that the Muslim community was very dispirited. It was not used to victories. It was not used to taking a positive action and having a positive result. So one of our goals, particularly in the beginning, in the first years of our organization, was to give people a demonstration that if you took a positive action, even making a phone call or writing a letter to a corporation saying when you fired that person for their religious practices, that wasn't a good thing and she got her job back, that showed that a small positive action has a positive result. And we built up case after case after case like that and gave the Muslim community a sense that if they do take individual actions in a positive way, it's going to have an impact. Instead of saying, oh, well, the Middle East situation is never resolved, this situation is never resolved, there's nothing we can do about this or that, we turned that around and said, yes, if you take these individual actions, you're going to have a positive result. And we gave them step-by-step guides. And so we built this kind of, as I say, synergistic mechanism for promoting civil rights and a positive image of Islam and Muslims. My heritage is English and French, particularly from Canada, French-Canadian, English-Canadian, and probably a little Native American thrown in there on the French-Canadian side. My grandmother, how she came over from Scotland and her experience taking the train across Canada to settle in Western Canada at that time. My immediate relatives, I guess in the grandmother, grandfather end of things, were actually immigrants to North America. My family on one side was Catholic, on the other side Protestant, which even at that time was a bit scandalous when my parents got together, Catholic and Protestant, just wasn't done at that time. So even today, you know, my mother has a Catholic roots, but she goes to Protestant churches, so... Coming to Islam is different for different people. You have some people who will read one verse in the Quran and that's it, they convert to Islam. For me, I'm a bit skeptical of things, so it took me longer. I would study, I would travel and read, and as each element of Islam I would read about or find out about, and I go, well, that makes sense, and then I'd go a little farther, and I'd say that makes sense, and that makes sense, and then ultimately you kind of come to the end of a road, and you go, well, I think all of this stuff makes sense, you know, I guess I better become Muslim. And for me, what was most attractive was the actively anti-racist stance of Islam and the egalitarian nature of Islam, universal brotherhood and sisterhood. It really is that there in essential Islam, you know, from the Prophet's tradition that all Muslims are like the teeth of a comb, in other words, equal. There's no, should be no distinctions between people. And many traditions of the Prophet rejecting race-based discrimination. I mean, think about it. It's more than 1,400 years ago, and you have someone saying, you know, if somebody who is black and crippled and old is put in charge of your group or your community, you obey them. You don't look to their skin color, you don't look to their age, you don't look to their physical disability and say, no, that person shouldn't lead me. No, if they're a pious person, all these other things don't matter. So the actively anti-racist stance was very attractive to me. When I first came to Islam in Minnesota, there just weren't that many Muslims. There wasn't a very organized Muslim community that had outreach efforts, that had programs for new Muslims or anything like that. It was like you picked it up in the streets kind of approach. Well, as someone of European heritage who doesn't appear to be Muslim in a stereotypical sense, I can kind of, the old term African Americans use was pass. You could pass in the larger society, even going through airports or something like that. You're not normally going to be singled out based on appearance or perception of being Muslim. So I typically don't have the personal issues a lot of people have. My issue with, even personal life is I have a very strict routine. I basically am work and at home, working at home, working at home. I really just, the level of activity that's necessary to do my job consumes the vast portion of my day on a daily basis and even on weekends. Because, for instance, I spend several hours a day just doing searches to find information. Was there a hate crime here? Was a mosque vandalized here? Did this candidate say that about Muslims and what should be done? And do you have to issue a news release or a statement? That doesn't stop on weekends. Well, I would talk about my hobby, beekeeping. Well, actually, beekeeping has a very Islamic angle to it. Honey is mentioned in the Quran as a healing for mankind or humankind. And I'm very interested in the medicinal use of bee products. And honey is very popular in the Muslim world. Anywhere you go in the Muslim world, the use of honey is much more widespread than it is in other parts of the world. And how bees construct their hives and how they find the nectar and process the nectar and all that is actually mentioned in the Quran as a sign of God's creation. And so it has a good Islamic angle there, even just for the hobby of beekeeping. The thing in Islam is, when a new Muslim or somebody thinking about becoming Muslim approaches me or I find out about that, I said, look, people are going to come up to you. They're going to tell you all kinds of strange kind of thing that immediately you have to stop this. Immediately you have to do this. And I tell them, say, thank you, brother, and thanks for the advice, but do what feels comfortable to you. For instance, even something as simple as stopping eating pork, at what point do you do that? A lot of people will do it even before they take shahada, as we call it, the declaration of faith. So people adopt different attributes of Islam at different points along that process. As I say, some people, it's a immediate bolt of lightning, on the road to Damascus kind of thing, and everything happens at once. Others, it happens more gradual, and, it just depends on the person. Well, I think there's been a tremendous rise in anti-Muslim sentiment, and particularly even in the last year. We saw anti-Muslim discrimination and acts and vandalism and whatnot after 9/11, in the immediate aftermath. But you didn't really see that mainstreaming of anti-Muslim hate that you see now within the last year or so, and particularly sparked by the manufactured controversy over the Park 51 Center in New York. That seemed to be a real turning point that gave legitimacy in some manner to mainstreaming anti-Muslim hate. Even after 9/11, if you said Islam was evil and Muslims have to be deported and Islam should be destroyed, you were on the extreme fringes of our society. But now you have presidential candidates, one who won a straw poll in Iowa saying that he would not appoint any Muslim to his administration because you can't trust Muslims. And he didn't have to backtrack. And in fact, got more support from his niche audience after saying that. Whereas in the past, he would have had to apologize. He would have been repudiated even by Republicans. That doesn't happen anymore. In fact, people are beginning to revel in their ignorance and intolerance and say that, you know, if I say something negative about Islam, that's going to be a net plus in terms of political support for me. So I'm going to keep doing it. And if I'm challenged on that, well, that's because you're an elite leftist intellectual who just wants to enforce political correctness on me, and I don't have to listen to you. And that's a real change in our society, and I think Muslims are going to be in a very bad position in the run-up to the 2012 elections, because every politician from the right to the left is going to feel an obligation to, if not attack Muslims, at least not defend them. The right will attack Muslims. That the anti-Muslim hate has become almost a plank of the right-wing political platform. And even on the left, they're going to be so afraid of being called, you know, traitors or pro-Muslim or soft on terrorism or something like that. At most, they'll say, oh, well, there are some good Muslims, some bad. They're not going to have a strong defense of the American Muslim community because of their fear of the Tea Party and the extreme right. So I think it's going to be a very difficult situation for the American Muslim community and for America, because, you know, if you believe that America is based on tolerance and diversity and pluralism, it's going to be pretty rough going up to the 2012 election. Well, every day we try and come up with a response to this kind of hate campaign. It's not always easy, because when people aren't open to an argument based on facts and accurate information, and they prefer to wallow in ignorance, there's not a lot you can do. But, you know, when there's a political mobilization against you, as we see in almost 20 states now around the country adopting so-called anti-Sharia laws, I mean, it's the most bizarre thing you've ever heard of, that legislatures in states around the country are proposing bills to ban something that doesn't exist and will never exist, but somehow it's portrayed as a good thing. You know, that political mobilization has to be met with a counter-political mobilization on the part of the American Muslim community and those who support American Muslims. CARE tends to be the leading edge of the challenge to anti-Muslim bigotry in our society. And because we're the most vocal organization defending Muslims in America, we come under 24/7 attack from the cottage industry of Muslim bashers and Islamophobes who make a living seeking to marginalize American Muslims and to demonize Islam. In the Minnesota community, with the rise in the number of Somali Muslims, you have the intergenerational issues, you have Klan issues, you have the issues, unfortunately, sometimes of gangs and drugs, and where the youth feel alienated from the older generation or from Islam. And that's really takes, it's a big challenge for the community leaders. And then you have, unfortunately, the whole issue with Somali youth going overseas and all of the negative fallout from that kind of thing. So Minnesota, particularly because of the growth in the Somali community, has had many challenges over the last few years. The response to these kinds of issues is definitely not to increase alienation and marginalization. The response is to make people feel included as legitimate parts of the society, to feel that they can follow their faith without discrimination or attack. That's what really needs to happen. But if all the people hear is attacks on their faith, rhetorical or otherwise, you know, it only serves to marginalize and alienate people, which does nobody any good. I think you've seen positive development and maturity of the American Muslim community and the Minnesota Muslim community on a number of levels, social, political particularly. You have development of mosques, growth in the number of mosques, schools, even things like cemeteries. We didn't have Muslim cemeteries many years ago. You have more political involvement. You have Muslims running for public office around the country. You have the first Muslim in Congress from Minnesota, Keith Ellison. Now we have two Muslims in Congress, Andre Carson out of Indiana as well. You're seeing more Muslims on things like school boards and city councils and those kinds of things nationwide, more Muslims voting. There's a fairly high percentage of Muslims who vote on a regular basis. We encourage people to work in political campaigns, contribute to political campaigns on an individual level, and to just in general become part of the political process, whether that means meeting with their congressman, meeting with the mayor, writing a letter to the editor, writing an editorial, calling in on talk radio programs. There's any number of things you can do to become a positive participant in the society. Well, I think obviously one of the first misconceptions about Islam and Muslims is treatment of women. And the problem is there are enough examples of mistreatment of women around the Muslim world that it raises concern. But when you go back to the original sources of Islam, you could almost say that Islam brought a form of feminism to a part of the world in which women were treated as less than slaves. They were like, they weren't even good property. Not even property, but they weren't even good property at the time. Or, that the time of the Prophet, a woman would stand up and challenge the leader of the Muslim community and say, "You're wrong." And people say, "How dare you challenge the leader of the community?" And they would say, "No, you know, anybody has the right to challenge." Well, American Muslims get tremendous support from the majority of Americans who aren't hostile to their faith. We see time and time again with our research that there's always a hardcore minority of Americans who are hostile to Islam, and it generally is in the area of about 30% or so. But that means that the vast majority of Americans are not hostile to Islam, but they may not have information about Islam, may not have interacted with Muslims. And we also find that when people interact with ordinary American Muslims, prejudice goes down. When they know more about Islam and Muslims, prejudice goes down. We try and turn the challenges into positive results. And that's been another CARE philosophy. You know, the old, when you get lemons, make lemonade. We try and do some kind of jujitsu on negative events. For instance, if the Quran is alleged to be desecrated in Guantanamo, we turn that into an initiative to distribute free Qurans to Americans of all faiths. If the Prophet is defamed by offensive cartoons in Denmark, we turn that into an opportunity to distribute DVDs and books about the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to Americans. So we try and flip these kinds of negatives into positives.